Mike Rowe here with a few thoughts on my favorite sweatshirt, a classic zip-up hoodie that used to be navy blue but has since faded to what the fashionistas call a distressed indigo. It's 13 years old, soft as a flannel bathrobe, and after a few hundred dirty jobs, demonstrably and undeniably indestructible. This is the kind of sweatshirt girlfriends like to permanently borrow, but I've held on to this one because I got it from American Giant. American Giant makes all their stuff right here in the USA so they can control every link in their own supply chain. That matters, because when you buy American Giant, you not only get great quality, you create jobs for people in factory towns all over the country. No pressure, but if you give a damn about the business of making things in America, you got to support the companies who are doing it right. Go to American-Giant.com/Mike to get 20% off your first order. That's American-Giant.com/Mike.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch. Claw up against the wall.
Can't explain it, what I'm feeling right now, guys.
I can't believe it.
Let's open up that rave line.
Woohoo! Oh, I can't believe USD has hired Lincoln Riley. Oh, yeah.
Hello, everybody. We are back. Episode 479 coming to you on Monday, March 27th, 2013. March is coming to an end, but not our content. This is a bonus content week. We're going to be coming back later this week for our YouTube members. So if you're a member of the podcast here on YouTube, join us later this week as we're going to have our March bonus episode, which we're super excited for. But this is a normal episode. We got a ton of news in this one. Talk about tight end changes for USC. USC is without a tight end, but potentially getting a new one. We'll see what happens. We're going to talk about it here on this episode and so much more, including the Trojans getting a new analyst. We'll talk about Pro Day. And take your questions, as always, here on the podcast. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Reign of Troy. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Reign of Troy. Be sure to subscribe where you get your podcasts. Stitcher, TuneIn, Overcast, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts, we are there. Of course, we are live on YouTube every Monday night, 5 p.m. Pacific time, as we are right now. Big shout out to everyone in the chat. What's up to Scott? Fighting on MC is in the chat. Everybody's in here, and we're excited to talk USC football. As always, I'm your host, Mike Castillo, journalist with my co-hosts in the Rantroy studio in Los Angeles, Lisa D'Artola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. We are back for the final episode of March. March Madness sort of coming to an end. As we can see, the Final Four is set. USC, of course, not in it, eliminated in the first weekend of the NCAA tournament. But what a weird development. What a weird Final Four. Like Miami and the FAU both in it. San Diego State, future potential Pac-12 member in it.
I absolutely love it. I love it when underdogs win in the tournament. And this, if memory serves me correct, if you add up all the teams, all of the seeds, this is like the second highest or one of the highest numbers that you've ever gotten for a Final Four.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely amazing. And I love it. I have heard some compelling arguments though, about how this might be less about the teams and more about the selection committee, not giving mid majors as much love as they should. I think FAU is a really good example of that because they won a whole lot of games. And I know that they weren't playing in a major conference, but they literally lead the nation in victories this year. So I don't know, maybe FAU is the whole FAU ain't played anybody sort of comment obviously is being proven incorrectly, because those wins have turned into an incredible run, and we're going to get a team that is in the national title game for the first time, no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And three of the four teams that are competing for a national title this year have never won one before in basketball. So while UConn is clearly going to be the favorite to win it all, if someone other than UConn wins it, it's sort of a whole new era. So that's extremely exciting. And I see Ramamurti is saying CBS is unhappy with the Final Four. Oh, of course they are. Of course they are. No, they want Duke and Kentucky. And
to me, this is the irony of all this. Like, we all love underdogs, but yet every time there's underdogs, people complain that nobody's going to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I'm weird. I'm more likely to watch if there's an underdog who has a chance to win.
But I think people want David versus Goliath. They don't want That's a bunch true. Of Davids.
Yeah. Right? They want FAU versus North Carolina. And right. Instead they're getting something different, but this whole tournament has been really, really fun. I've had the privilege of being able to cover it for fansided.com, and it's been really, really fun to tune in every night and know that some wacky wildness is going to go on. And that's the joy of March Madness, and I will continue to say it for the USC basketball fans out there, whether you agree with me or not. Like, if Miami can do this, why aren't we holding USC to this?
Exactly. I think Miami is kind of the prototype in this instance of like what SC should be, right? Like they went to the Elite Eight last year. They went to the Final Four this year. Like, yeah, that's what SC
wants.
And I'm not saying that
USC should be.
I don't think it's crazy for SC to have a Final Four run every 20 years. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I'm not saying that like USC should be expect to be this juggernaut or whatever. I'm just looking at the teams that are there. Right. And I'm saying I've never seen USC be there. And why is that? And how does USC make that happen? And that's just the question that I'm asking. So,
Nearly made it there 2 years ago, but alas.
As my dad is fond of saying, almost only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades. So
true. Yeah. Anyways, we got a bunch of news here on this episode. So let's get right to it. All right,
I'm going to cut you off real quick before you jump into the news, because I have one last thought about the NCAA tournament.
Oh, dear.
You made a comment to me, and I completely agree with you, that, and this is the difference between an Elite Eight and a Final Four, if you're there for the final weekend, like, that's as good as winning a championship. Obviously, you want to win a championship.
Oh, yes.
But, like, a Final Four berth, having your team involved in the final weekend of the tournament, like, that's on a whole different level than anything else. Like, the difference is huge to me. But
You want to know why? Everybody remembers George Mason going to the Final Four, right?
Yeah.
Who won the national title that year?
I don't know. Yeah.
You don't know?
I have no idea.
He was Florida, but nobody remembers. Like people remember that Florida won two titles back to back.
Yeah.
But like, people remember the Final Four runs more than anything. And so to me, and you know, not to make this a UCLA basketball sympathetic podcast, which is not certainly, but like the flukiness of all, like, you play so many games, and like the randomness of like single elimination tournaments, I think you really should put more value in just getting to the Final Four rather than winning the national title, considering how random it is to even advance in the NCAA tournament. Like the best teams don't always get there, as evidence with Gonzaga, as evidence with, you know, UCLA over the years.
Well, you would have been Ben Howland's best friend then.
Certainly,
From 2006 to 2008. Like,
look at all the crap I talk about the Dodgers, right? Like, the Dodgers are the best team in baseball, and they cannot win a crapshoot tournament. But like, that says more about the crapshoot tournament than it does about the Dodgers.
Yeah.
Even though surely I'll troll the Dodgers
you'll get your trolling in. I get you.
I'm allowed to do that.
I'll get my trolling in on UCLA. Like, I try to keep my trolling to a minimum because I don't want to. Like, I never want to.
We still got that Apple Podcast review that said that you know, we're just arrogant talking about other schools. So well, you don't want to do that. Anyways, news. Talking about news. USC is without a new tight end. Not without a new tight end. Out with
an old tight end.
A tight end who we didn't even include in the season preview.
Which is Malcolm Epps. We were like predicting this.
I don't know. I don't know what happened for us. Malcolm Epps transferred from Texas to USC ahead of the 2021 season. Caught 10 passes for 173 yards and a touchdown in 2021. Last year, a little bit of a different season. He caught 4 passes, 3 catches, 2 touchdowns, and an interception. Of course, on the Hail Mary against Fresno State, one that potentially turned the game around, helped SC sort of put the dogs away. We didn't know what was going to happen going into spring. We hadn't seen anything on social media about whether or not he was going to come back. We hadn't seen anything. We sort of assumed that he was, you know, done with his eligibility. And we didn't include him in our preview. That was bad on us because he was there on the USC roster as spring camp broke earlier or started earlier this month. Of course, that is no longer the case. He released a statement on Wednesday announcing that he was going to put his name into the transfer portal. This leaves SC currently with just 3 scholarship tight ends on the roster: Jude Wolf, Lake McCree, and Carson Paparazzi. And as we know, tight end help is not necessarily coming this fall because USC's tight end signee is not enrolling.
Walker Lyons.
Lyons is going on a Mormon mission, and he will be enrolling it next season. So SC surely needs the tight end help, which we'll talk about potentially in a second, that could be coming.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I liked Malcolm Epps as a player. I thought he was an interesting sort of red zone option for USC, and that kind of played out with he had 3 catches, 2 touchdowns last year. I don't begrudge him going in the transfer portal just because the production opportunities haven't necessarily been there for tight ends over the past couple of years. And when you factor in someone like Lake McCree, who, or even Jude Wolf, if he's able to be healthy, opportunities will not necessarily be rising for somebody like Malcolm Epps. It's disappointing, but again, if a guy's going out to try and sort of find his place in the world, you can't begrudge him that. And I've said this on the show before, it's tough for someone like me who has a reputation for loving tight ends, and I do genuinely love tight ends. One of the reasons that I really enjoy watching the Kansas City Chiefs, even though I'm not a Chiefs fan, is that like watching Travis Kelce work is just really fun.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
He's pretty damn good. And I've always appreciated tight ends that are out there making plays and doing the nitty gritty, and also doing, you know, the George Kittles of the world are also very fun to watch. And you know, just like a really, really, really good tight end, it doesn't really get much better than that in terms of like my entertainment value. The problem is that unless the tight ends are forcing you to use them the way that George Kittle and Travis Kelce force you to use them, unless you don't have weapons at wide receiver, like happened to USC when, you know, Fred Davis was literally the number one target on that offense. That was as much about Fred Davis being amazing as not really having wide receivers who were commanding all of the targets. So it's kind of difficult to look at a tight end room and say, like, this is a trouble spot for USC, when USC's offense was not hurting for not using the tight ends last season. And I don't expect it to be hurting for not using the tight ends this coming season. I do enjoy Lake McCree. I am excited to see Lake McCree. To be completely honest, I'm not going to expect anything out of Jude Wolf until I see it happen, because the injury thing has been there too often, and it was going to be my philosophy for Ethan Ray going forward as well. And I believe he's going pro in something other than sports. So like, that's sort of where I'm at with the tight ends. It's like, do I want to see Lake McCree? Yes, I do want to see Lake McCree. Am I going to sweat too much about the tight end room given what we've seen from this offense, that doesn't necessarily need the tight end to be a featured. I'm not saying you shouldn't have a guy out there. You should absolutely have a guy out there and try to get him involved. But I'm not sweating it too much.
Yeah, and as Walker points out in the chat, Kate Eldridge, who's a 3-star athlete listed in 24/7 Sports, is going to join the Trojans later this summer and play tight end and certainly
and
help
they're
there
always,
too.
USC has always found bodies at tight end.
Sure.
They've always seemed to get a walk-on or two who can sort of fill a gap if they're low on bodies. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they'll figure this out. I think it's just unfortunate that USC has really bad injury luck at the position, and also like a guy like Malcolm Epps has decided that he's going to try to find more opportunity somewhere else. So
yeah, and there is a walk-on, Luke Ott, who's a sophomore out of Simi Valley. He's listed as a walk-on in USC's roster this spring. I think the Malcolm Epps thing, I understand, players wanting a fresher start, and there's so many different wide receivers at SC right now that it, you know, might be difficult to be the guy at tight ends, because being the guy at tight ends still might not mean that you get many opportunities, as seen with Epps last year, participating in 14 games. So yeah, I think he's one of those guys who's had a couple of, you know, nagging injuries just like everybody else, but still participated in 14 games and only had 3 catches. So if you want to go somewhere else where you can, you know, find more opportunity, by all means, go do it. Like, that's what college football is set up to do right now. You might as well be able to go out and find those things. And for SC, it's about going forward and seeing what you can make out of the tight end situation. Like we've talked about before, I think it's less about tight ends. It's more about inside receivers, and inside receivers includes tight ends, because SC has a ton of guys who can be inside, at wide receiver. We know that, SC's got so many different wide receivers we've talked about before coming in, currently and coming back, later this summer. I mean, just right now on the roster, you've got, Branch, Rice, Williams, Jackson, Hudson, Singer, Washington, Lemon. Like, you're overloaded of what you have at wide receiver. And so many of those guys can play inside and sort of take up opportunities that tight ends could have. Obviously, it's a different type of mismatch on a linebacker, a speedy guy versus a big body guy, but it's still a mismatch nonetheless. And in an offense like what Lincoln Riley has, yes, there's been, you know, amazing tight ends that he's developed. Mark Andrews, a prime example that Ramon Murty in the chat points out. But at the same time, like, there's not always that big producing tight end in his offense, and he finds other ways to produce.
Yes. Yeah. And Mark Andrews is another one of those guys who's really, really good. But when he's putting up like leading the team and receiving sort of numbers, you also look at the wide receiver group and you're like, well, that's also part of
what the knock on the Ravens. Yeah.
I mean, it's an absolute knock on the Ravens. The Ravens wide receiver core is, I don't know. There's a reason Lamar Jackson wants to trade.
I mean, look at SC with Fred Davis, right?
Yeah. Like, that wide receiver core was not.
We all talk about how, you know, insane Fred Davis was, greatest USC tight end ever, all those things. And yet you look at it and like, well, part of the reason that he was able to shine so much was because that, you know, wide receiver core in 2007, it was the year after Dwayne Jarrett left, the year after Steve Smith left. It was the year that Damian Williams was sitting out due to transfer. It was led by Vidal Hazelton and Patrick Turner. And I think that those guys were good, but they weren't the guys before them. They weren't the All-American
guys.
Guys
after them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But I mean, and again, not to go down a tight end rabbit hole, but like the Fred Davises of the world, the Mark Andrews of the world, mm-hmm. In those offenses, like the defense knows that those are the only guys that are going to produce. So like, it's still impressive that they put up those kinds of numbers, because everyone walks in knowing that's the guy that runs the offense, and still mm-hmm. they're able to put up those numbers. So it's certainly not taking anything away from those guys, but there is a difference when you have a stacked receiving core. And that's something that you have to sort of factor in. The other thing to take, I think the bigger question for USC at tight end is how much does USC want the tight ends involved in the run game? Because we saw USC's rushing attack improve immensely in 2022. Part of that was the scheme putting USC's runners in better position to succeed. And, you know, Josh Follow and the tight ends played a role in the success of that rushing attack. Well, USC has to replace Josh Follow in more than just a receiving role. And I think the real question here is, if Jude Wolf is not healthy, does USC have a body in there that can be the Josh Follow? And I sort of would have expected Malcolm Epps to be that guy, even if he wasn't going to be catching a bunch of passes.
Yeah.
There would have been reps on the field for a tight end because we saw Josh Follow have those reps, or at least a lot of them. Is Lake McCree ready to physically mature enough to take on more of that kind of blocking role as well? I don't know. I think this is a big spring for him in that role. Like I said, you know, Jude Wolf is that guy if he's healthy. I just don't know if he's ever going to be healthy. So that's a bigger question that USC has to answer with Malcolm Epps leaving. And I think it's just not as the margin of error there has shrunk considerably by losing Malcolm Epps. But like I said, there are ways around the tight, like of all of the positions on USC's offense, like the tight end is almost like a luxury position, the way I see it. And so there are ways around USC dealing with this. I think that's kind of why the next bit of news that we have is quite exciting, because there are luxury players who potentially could be joining.
And some of those luxuries are pretty good. And I mentioned Vidal Hazelton. Speaking of guys who signed late, potentially, SC could be going after one of those guys. Of course, USC football on Twitter tweeted on Sunday afternoon a fight on emoji. What does this mean? Usually it means that somebody is signed, somebody is committed, somebody is something. Who is it? We don't know yet as of now. It's Monday night. But perhaps it's Deuce Robinson, the five-star tight end out of Pinnacle High in Phoenix, the number one tight end in the country, the number 19 overall recruit. What do we know about him? He is said to be making his decision by April 1st, wants to make it by April 1st, deciding between SC and Georgia. Other schools involved in there are Alabama, Texas, and Oregon. Really expected to be an SC and Georgia battle. For a long time, it was kind of assumed he was just going to go to Georgia. Georgia's the two-time defending national champs. They have the best tight end in the country currently. It makes sense that when Brock Bowers goes on to the NFL after next season, that Deuce Robinson would just inherit that job. But if SC's going to be in here and in it to win it, this is maybe a huge opportunity, and maybe this is something that SC has nailed down and just waiting on the announcement now. You don't know.
And it could also just be some random three-star offensive lineman that committed, over the weekend. You literally never know.
You don't know, yeah.
But the timing, everyone immediately jumped to it, right? Like, we know he was going to want to make his decision by April 1st. It's March 27th. That was March 26th. There's only a few days left until April 1st. Like, an emoji comes out of nowhere. I don't remember seeing things about USC hosting particular players or anything like that to consider some alternative. So it feels like that signs pointing. I don't know. What we do know is that Deuce Robinson is that luxury player I was talking about. Like, Deuce Robinson has the potential to be the Mark Andrews or the Fred Davis or the Travis Kelce or the Brock Bowers, as you brought up. I think 24/7 Sports compared him to Darren Waller, who's a star for the Raiders. So
sort of the guy that makes you prioritize him over the slot guys.
Yes. And I think adding him now, would adding him as a fall enrollee with baseball looming overhead for 2023, do I think it would be fair to look at him and say, like, he's going to be a factor in the 2023 USC offense? Like, I don't know about that. That's probably a stretch.
Yeah.
I never want to look at a player and sort of put that kind of weight on them. But we have seen Brock Bowers is a good example of a young guy who came in and was really good really early.
You know, he's from Napa, by the way. Have you ever heard about that?
Never. Yeah. I think landing Deuce Robinson doesn't solve all of your problems. Cause again, like Deuce Robinson to me, certainly as a young kid right now, doesn't solve the problem that I was talking about with USC and the tight end and the run game and who's going to replace the sort of veteran mature body of blocking ability that Josh Fowler was able to tap into in 2022. But he certainly gives Lincoln Riley another weapon to factor into the offense. And the one thing we know about Lincoln Riley is if he's got a weapon and that weapon is dangerous, then Lincoln Riley is incentivized to use that weapon and he'll make it work. He'll get the most. So yeah, Deuce Robinson would be a very, very exciting prospect. You don't want to count your chickens before they've hatched, because we are completely speculating that this fight on emoji could be Deuce Robinson, but it's sort of a keep your eye out. I mean, by the time we end this this episode, who knows? The news could have broken. So
yeah, and the interesting thing with Robinson as well is he's a two-sport star, and the MLB draft is coming up in June. He's expected to be talented enough to be drafted in the MLB draft. What does that mean? I don't know. We're gonna have to watch out. And is an MLB team going to buy him out of his football career? It's possible.
I want to say I saw a quote from him that was saying that he, if they wouldn't, because the rules are so complicated, I can't keep track of the rules at this point, but it sounds like if he couldn't sign the contract with a baseball team and also play college football, that he was going to play college football. At least that's the plan. So it sounds like the MLB is only going to be a thing if he can do it simultaneously, if he can work out the technical sides of like eligibility and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that USC needs to worry about him committing and then not showing up because he's, you know, on a baseball field somewhere in Alabama or whatever, like in the minors. But it is a real, like plans can change. He could.
Right.
End up in an organization that he didn't expect to be in and sort of go full bore for them. So
more to his decision making, I think this is more reason to take your time and get it right. Right. Yeah. Like when you have different factors in here, I always find it crazy that, you know, signing day is signing day, but that doesn't mean you have to sign all day. That's just the first day you can file.
Yeah.
It's the opposite of taxes. You know what I mean? Like everyone talks about tax day. Tax day isn't the day that you file. It's the last day that you can file.
Yeah.
Right. Like if you're filing on tax day, it's because you've procrastinated.
Yes.
If you are signing on signing day, that's just because you're antsy and you're
ready to go.
You're ready to go. And you know, a lot of guys probably would benefit from not signing on signing day and taking a little bit to think about it. And so, I think it's frustrating from a fan perspective to wait. But, you know, especially in the era of the transfer portal and everything. And I think it makes sense to get the most information that you can. So we'll see what happens with Deuce Robinson as we go forward. Maybe by next week we'll know. Next episode, of course, after April 1st. Other USC news. Joining the coaching staff is Greg Brown. 40-plus years of various coaching experience. He's going to be an analyst. His experience includes being a Saints assistant in the mid-2000s. He was Arizona's co-defensive coordinator in 2010 alongside Tim Kish and under Mike Stoops. He was Colorado's defensive coordinator the first 2 years in the Pac-12, 2011 and 2012, under John Embry. That did not go well for Colorado. There's a Mike Bone connection, by the way. And Alabama's DB's coach in 2013. Most recently, he was the defensive coordinator last year for Charlotte. SC put out a statement about him, I believe, that includes mentioning that as a defensive backs coach, Brown has developed three Jim Thorpe recipients: Dion Figures at Colorado in 1992, Chris Hudson at Colorado in 1994, and Gerard Holloman at Louisville in 2014. Each won the award, which is presented to the nation's top defensive backs. So, what do you make of this? an analyst joining the staff. This feels like a very Alabama Nick Saban-y move, but what say you?
Literally couldn't hurt.
Yes.
Right? Like, I think that you look at that kind of wealth of experience, and he's clearly been doing some things right over many decades of work in college football. I like that he had Thorpe Award winners in the 90s and then another in 2014. It goes to show that he understands the sort of modern game in a way that if it was just Thorpe Award winners in 92 and 94 and nothing else, like you might look at and say, well, how much does he really understand the modern game? But it looks like he has sort of kept up with things more recently. And I think that when you look at it, USC can use every set of eyes as possible on this defense to get this defense right. So I like the addition. I hope it works out. It's hard to say really with an analyst.
Yeah.
But like I said, it literally cannot hurt, at least not from what I can see.
That's my thought. We're talking about a guy who's 65, taking a job to stay in football, probably still has that itch to still be around.
But it's hard to be an on-field coach doing all of the the recruiting and all that kind of stuff. I get the appeal of being an analyst.
Yeah, and he was a year out of football in 2021. Did not have a job then either. So, yeah, here he is at SC as an analyst. The more the merrier. And if he can, you know, bestow his expertise on the defensive coaching staff, then by all means, like this is a good thing. This can only help. I can't imagine a way that this is a negative for SC, especially when the whole goal of USC's defensive coaching staff this year is just to improve.
Marginal gain.
And you know, the corners, I'm not sure the corners are the position group that needs the most help, but that doesn't mean that you can't give them help. So, yeah, go for it. Big ad for SC. We'll see what happens with him going forward. Pro Day was last week, Tuesday, I believe. And what do you make of Pro Day? It was super rainy. It brought a bunch of conversations about USC's facilities. SC, of course, does not have a full inside facility, indoor facility that you would see at other schools, primarily ones with, say, worse weather. ASU plays in extremely hot weather in the Sonoran Desert. They have an indoor facility, right? A lot of the teams in the South that play in humidity have indoor facilities. USC does not. And so it rained and rained and rained, and a bunch of guys did not do the 40 because of it. Alicia, you got thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, it's really unfortunate. It's really unfortunate for, you know, for guys like Jordan Addison and Tuli Tupelotu. It doesn't really change too much. They got to go to the combine. They got to show their stuff there. This pro day is not the end all be all for guys like that. It is the end all be all for guys like, I don't know, Josh Follow and Terrell Bynum and those guys who are just like scraping and trying to get their shot at the NFL. So it's a bummer for those guys that the field stuff got so rained out. But when it comes to facilities, like, and I was talking about this with people on Twitter, it's like the rain that we saw that week or the that week and then the previous weeks that we've been having rain in Southern California is
it's uncharacteristic.
Is like, I can remember once in my life before this year, the rain that felt this much.
Yeah.
And it was when I was a kid, like, and El Nino was the new name that we called things.
Like, having said that, like, rain in March is not necessarily rare.
No, I mean, and that's the thing is I went to probably three USC pro days in a row, and two of the three were rain. There was rain. But like when it rains in LA, normally the rain that I experience on those days is like, you need to have like a jacket on because it'll be drizzling a bit, but like the field never gets to a point where it's unusable. Whereas like this time it was unusable. And the, I guess the guys who ran the 40 had to, they found like the driest strip of the field that they could find. West Texas Mike asked, does USC not have a relationship with the Rams and SoFi? You know, again, like you, that would, I would have to take some like proactive planning and logistics that are probably not necessary 99.9% of the time if it was capable of happening at all.
That would be interesting. I wonder if there would be some sort of problem in having a pro day technically on an NFL.
That's another question. Is that even
property?
Is that even allowed?
Because the idea about the pro day is you want the scouts from all the different teams there, right? And I know that SoFi is different than, say, having the thing at the Rams facility or at the Chargers facility.
Yeah.
And the Chargers lay just as much claim to the stadium itself, even that they don't own it like the Rams do.
Yeah.
But if you are a Colts scout, would you be allowed to be in SoFi to, for pro day? I don't know how that would work.
These are questions
I don't know.
I mean, obviously,
I see the logic in like having some sort of deal to have the pro day there, but yeah. I don't know about the logistics, but technically.
But also, like, again, these are things that once in 30 years do you need to have these contingencies.
Kenny also says it's famously not indoors too. Yeah.
SoFi
there's there's like a roof that's not a complete roof. It's like an awning.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I don't know. I don't know if SoFi would have even been able to, like you said, logistically, legally, all of those kinds of things. We don't know. Yeah. In the end, like, it was a debate about whether or not USC is a poverty program for not having a full sized indoor facility.
Yeah. SC famously a very poverty stricken school. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I've heard the anecdote from Ryan Abraham about Heritage Hall and.
For sure. Yes.
So, like, yes. But I think that, like, okay, I've been inside of the indoor facility that USC has at the McKay Center. It is an indoor sort of like a half field. Maybe
it's like 30 yards.
Yeah, maybe it's slightly less than half. Yeah. In the basement, basically. And, like, I think that's probably more than enough for what USC uses it for 99.9% of the time. Right. Would it be nice if USC could have a full regulation field indoor? Absolutely. I just ask, where are you going to put that? Because if you look at like the footprint of the McKay Center, like you're running out of room. Maybe if you built a full football facility, if you took down the baseball stadium and Howard Jones and did a whole thing like Olympics has sort of talked about, like maybe you create a full indoor field in your basement of whatever new snazzy football facilities that USC can think up next. But if you're going to have football facilities on campus, it's really tough to figure out where you actually fit that. Like you don't, in honor of all the Oklahoma fans who were talking crap about USC over this, like this isn't Norman. Like land is not just there for you to build an indoor facility when you literally don't need it except for once in 30 years.
I think there's only two options. One, the first thing that came to mind was, you know, that the parking lot on the corner of Vermont and Jefferson.
Yes.
That there was like nothing there. Currently, I just pulled up the Google Maps. Apparently, it's a temporary research facility, Dornsife TRF. That's okay. New, I guess, to me. but like, yeah, we know that Dado Field is going to get overhauled as part of the Olympic stuff. So I don't know how much of that is a hindrance. I think the other option, the option that makes the most sense, is building some sort of roof over Howard Jones and Brian Kennedy. And then the problem is it going to be big enough? A, and B, would that be, does that mean that you've got to practice over at, formerly Cromwell Field, that's now, Allison Felix Stadium or whatever it is? Like, you got to practice over there for a year And then on top of that, on turf. And then you get people talking about like what that means for like ACL tears. And then if you build that facility, I mean, just if you roof Howard Jones and Brian Kennedy, then what does that mean for the Olympic Dado project? Like, it's very difficult. There's really no other place to put anything. It almost feels like SC would then be potentially practicing over it like McAllister Field or something. And that would be weird and probably unfair to the women's soccer team. So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
West Texas Mike says just build a softball field with a retractable roof. Where? Yeah. I think this is a big reason why SC doesn't have a softball team is because, you know, where are they going to do it?
Yeah. There's just all sorts of logistical things. And like we said, like 99% of the time you don't need it. I saw some people who were rightfully making the point like, okay, during the summer, it gets pretty hot. Like you'd think that the football team would like an indoor facility then. As a reporter who had to stand on the side of Howard Jones Field for 4 hours a day for fall camp. Yes, I would have loved an indoor facility. But also, like, you can bear that heat, and I can just hear the message boards now talking about how weak USC's team is because they won't practice in the sun anymore.
Well, you can never win those.
But you can never win it, yeah. But
I find it very funny to me, and the heat in LA is hot. Yes, absolutely.
But it's not unsafe.
You don't want people to be
practice,
be at risk of heat stroke and all those things. But the irony is, like, of all the places in the country that have weather that needs some sort of special considerations, you can't also say that SC is amazing because it's located in LA where the weather is perfect. You know what I mean? Like there's this weird dichotomy here. Like, I know there's a lot of SC fans who say that there should be no day games in September because of the heat. And it's like, I hear you. It gets hot. We all remember the San Jose State game, the Purdue game, those extremely hot games, right? But you're in a conference, at least currently, not for much longer, with the Arizona schools in which in the sun, it will be like 140 degrees.
And those schools have protocols because it is literally unsafe.
Yes, it's literally unsafe.
To engage in a football game at USC.
You're going to make an exception for anybody in the conference. It should be for them.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
USC's weather conditions make things uncomfortable, not unsafe.
Right. Someone would say anything over 90 degrees is unsafe. And that's probably to an extent. You know what I mean? I don't know. Anyways, pro day. Here's some 40-yard dash times if those things something you care about. Terrell Bynum, 4.5 seconds. Travis Dye, 4.75. Josh Follow, 4.77. Brandon Peely, 5.3. He did the bench for 24 reps. Brett Nealon did 29 reps. Good for him. That's all I got.
I'm trying to find it. When Vi Malapai did his 40-yard dash at Pro Day.
4.75.
Last time, what was it?
What was his time?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because, like, I saw, I'm pretty sure it was Travis Dye who was talking about how, like, he felt his just feet sinking into the turf and, like, slowing him down with every step. Because Vi ran it on this past week, so.
So Vi's time last year was he didn't run it.
He didn't. Well, because he had that he had a hamstring injury or something like that. So that would have been cool to cross reference to sort of get a sense of what the pace difference was. But yeah,
Ben Griffiths, 2022, 4.96.
Well, it's faster than I could run. That's all I'll say. I mean, I got to give Terrell Bynum a shot. Like 4.5 in those conditions is not terrible.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I think I think if you're Travis Dye, I think you throw out that 4.575 and see if you can like do a private run or something like that. Because
exactly. Yeah. Last little spring football note to mention: Lincoln Riley, quoted by Chris Trevino over on Twitter about Corey Foreman. Quote, he's such a better player now than he was 12 months ago. It's not even close. There's a good sounding quote for SC fans, especially on defense when the SC needs to make big strides on defense. And one of those guys has been, where is Corey Foreman? What's he going to do? We all know that he beat UCLA with the interception of DTR late in the game. But outside of that, you still want to see more out of him. Former number one recruit. Here we go into year three, suddenly looking better than he was 12 months ago. I think that's a good thing.
Well, he's made a position change, and we talked in our preview about what would that mean for him. Would he need to get his weight back up? Where does he fit at defensive end as opposed to rush end? Does it work for him? I wouldn't expect to hear anything different at this stage in spring on the Corey Foreman subject. I think the jury needs to remain very out on how he's progressing until a little bit later down the line. But it's still nice to know that like that at least they're telling us that things are going well on that position change and that he's making progress. Forgive me if I'm just a little bit skeptical. I've gone through too many spring camps. I've gone through too many spring camps, and a lot of those spring camps I got to see with my own eyes. So I got to cross reference whether or not the coaches were telling us something that were maybe blown smoke a little bit.
We see many a Jamel Cook.
Yes. Yeah. And I've heard many a soundbite about a player that, you know, wasn't going to have an impact, but because they were asked about, nice things got said about them. So I think there's reason to be hopeful on the Corey Foreman front, but you just gotta wait and see.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Last thing before we get to our mailbag. Last week we talked about a 64 team tournament that ESPN has put together for college football. SC was a number three seed with the Heisman winner, still number three seed. Went into the Sweet 16. While Chris Lowe over at ESPN has completed the tournament now. We talked about it before. SC going into the Sweet 16, having to play number two seed Tennessee, Eric Milton. Could they do it? Joe Milton. No. SC has lost to number two seed Tennessee in the Sweet 16, 44-41, a barn burner, according to Chris Lowe, who says, quote, it's always fun when a football game turns into a tennis match. And that's what happens when these two high-powered offenses go back and forth. USC quarterback Caleb Williams is dynamic as usual, and Tennessee quarterback Joe Milton III plays like he has something to prove, with everyone hyping Williams before the game. A special teams play, however, turns the game into the Vols' favor. D. Williams returned to punt 66 yards to set up the go-ahead touchdown. There it is, special teams.
Okay,
rearing its head.
I love the special teams call. Like, I think that's a really good call on Chris Lowe's part. I do. Having said that, like, Caleb Williams versus Joe Milton is not the same contest. I'm sorry.
It's not.
Now, you know, USC's offense making Joe Milton, no, USC's defense making Joe Milton look really, really good. Like, yes, plausible, certainly. But if you're asking me who I take, and I said this last week, who do I take, Caleb Williams or Joe Milton? I take Caleb Williams. I wouldn't put it past special teams being the decider in that game, though. But no, I think
that's a good shout. Yeah. We know that was one of the areas that SC fans were frustrated with the Trojans last year.
My eyes are more bulging out about what they have Washington doing. Yes,
this next little bullet here. So SC loses in the Sweet 16. Alicia, the final four is, let me read you the final four teams. Are you ready for this?
Ready.
Alabama, Washington, Ohio State, and LSU. All four of those teams, I think, have a valid explanation of getting there.
Yes.
On the surface, sure. Washington's final four run insane. Chris Lowe has Washington getting to the Final Four by winning the winning the South region, beating Oregon 38-35 in a rivalry game in the Sweet 16, which would be awesome. Great for the Pac-12 in the final year of the Pac-12. Like, that would be awesome, right? And then in the Elite Eight, beating number one overall seed Georgia 24-23.
Calling BS. I'll give you Washington, Oregon. Coin flip it. I'm cool with that. I really don't. I love Kalen DeBoer. I think Washington's going to be good. I'm not sure they're going to be like that good, mm-hmm. but I think there's have a chance of being that good. Sure. Washington over Georgia. No.
So no, the interesting out, thing no. is, if Washington beats Georgia, how do they do it for you? Like
Georgia
how does that game play out in your mind?
Georgia has injuries to go down to their third string quarterback.
Whoa. You have that little confidence in Washington beating Georgia?
Georgia has better athletes across the board than Washington.
Yes, but in that case, coaching then Georgia should never lose ever.
Well, they don't ever lose ever. So, well, like, I mean, fair. I guess the question is, like, yes, they're losing Jalen Carter. Yes, they're losing Stetson Bennett. But, like, are we really saying that Georgia's going to take that much of a step back this year? I don't think Georgia's going to take that much of a step back this year, given what Kirby Smart has built. Like, I think my biggest issue here is, like, thinking that in year two, Kalen DeBoer's Washington would be capable of upsetting the program juggernaut that is Georgia football at this point. I don't see it. We're gonna
record this and save it for later.
I'm just saying it's not like Georgia's gonna fall off a cliff, and I don't think that's what this thing is trying to say. But like, Georgia has been recruiting top five classes for the last few cycles.
Yeah,
they've followed through with developing their players into All Americans the last few cycles. Like, why are we acting like Washington? I don't think any of the Pac-12 teams could stand against Georgia, to be quite honest. Like,
I hear you, but I do think Washington's very well coached and all those things. Like,
I
see a world in which Washington could beat Georgia. I just wouldn't say it myself. Like, I wouldn't go out on that limb. The write up I think is tremendous here. Georgia's quest to win a third straight national championship comes to a bitter end when Washington defensive end Braylon Trice bats down a fourth down pass at midfield inside the final minute to keep the Dogs from moving into field goal range. Georgia tight end Brock Bowers has a huge game, the pair of TD catches, but Washington receiver Romo Dunze has the biggest catch of the game, a 24-yard touchdown in traffic that puts UW ahead to stay and keeps the Huskies' dream season alive.
No mention of
Michael Penix, but surely he threw that pass.
Dream season feels like the correct way to describe it.
I think Washington's really good. I
think so too. They're just not that good. They're just not that. Like, maybe I hold Georgia in too high of esteem. It's entirely possible I do. Sure. But what Kirby Smart has built is the rivaling Nick Saban at this point, and I don't bet against them.
Question for you. I too think that Georgia on their best day is unbeatable. See the Oregon game, see the TCU game where they've taken good teams and just make them look like they're three leagues below them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, there are also Georgia games where they sort of lollygag against Kent State.
That's playing with their food, man. Yeah,
I know.
It's different.
We saw the Ohio State game where they had to like pull it out against Ohio State.
But Ohio State's roster is better than Washington's roster.
I don't know. I think I might take Washington. I might take UW over Ohio State.
I would not.
Maybe that part of it is quarterback bias, and I think there's a lot of quarterback bias
going on in this. I think there's of quarterback bias going on.
No, that's fair. And,
we don't know what, like.
But I also
don't know who Georgia's quarterback's going to be. We don't know what Carson Beck's going to be. We don't know what Vandergraft's going to be.
to Little Rich to say quarterback bias when SC has the trump card.
It is extremely rich when my quarterback bias is having me pick USC over Tennessee. But the
difference is about quarterback bias, I don't think SC is getting the benefit of the doubt with the quarterback bias.
Yeah.
Because the defense was so jarring. Yeah.
Which is fair, but like, just.
All right. Let's get to the old mailbag. Alicia, you know the only good thing about football season being over?
There's literally nothing good about the football season being over. It's just an endless wait until the fall.
See, that's where you're wrong. It's tournament season. The best way to take your mind off the endless wait.
That is true. I may not want to watch the men play, but the USC women are pretty awesome.
Exactly, but it's not just SC. There's high-stake basketball moments all over the country. But you know what? They get even better with Prize Picks.
So you're saying the only thing better than watching Juju Watkins is taking the more on Juju Watkins.
Bingo. You can now turn your hoops knowledge and love of Juju Watkins into serious cash. Because you can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. Turn $10 into $1,000 with college basketball, NBA, and NHL entries. Best of all, Prize Picks lets you get on the action on more than 30 states across the country, including Texas, Georgia, and California.
That sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah, download the app today and use the code RANDOMTROY for a first deposit match up to $100.
That's the Prize Picks app with the code RANDOMTROY for the first deposit match up to $100.
Pick more.
Pick less.
It's that easy.
Hey everyone, it's Mike Silva from Talkin' Mets. I am always about helping my listeners, and today I want to help you eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. My wife and I tried it, and we love it. Every fresh, never frozen meal is chef crafted, dietitian approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. I was tired after a long day the other night, and I was at the table eating a delicious meal just minutes after walking in the door. Are you looking for a gourmet meal? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccoli, and asparagus. You can also choose from a weekly menu of 35 options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Don't forget your add-ons. There are 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? The Mets set the playoffs as their goal this year. Get started today and fuel up your springtime goals with Factor. Head to factormeals.com/Mets50 and use code Mets50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box. That's code METS50 at factormeals.com/METS50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. I tried Factor and loved it. Why don't you?
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You've got mail.
Let's get our YouTube comment we got last week on the episode from Jason. When SC and UCLA leave the Pac-12 will no longer be the conference of champions, says Jason. I assume the Pac-12 claims that title because of the total number of NCAA D1 championships that have all been won by the schools in the conference. The top three schools from the NCAA championships are all Pac-12 schools. Stanford, number one, with 131. UCLA with number two at 120. Number three, I can't read, at 111. The number four ranked school.
There's a lot of parentheses marks going on there, so I get the...
The number four ranked school is way behind the top three, and that's Texas at 55, literally half as many as SC has. So when SC and UCLA move to the Big Ten, is the Big Ten going to start calling themselves the Conference of Champions? So it's understandable why the Big Ten would want both SC and UCLA. They're both known brands that have won a lot of titles. By the way, Oregon is the next Pac-12 school, sitting at number 13 with 34 championships. Tied with the University of Denver, hockey powerhouse, by the way, University of Denver. And Oklahoma.
This is a really good point that I hadn't thought of. Bill Walton is going to be crying his eyes out for a long time. I think the Pac-12 will continue to call themselves the Conference of Champions because they probably own the trademark. They'll probably get away with it by just saying that Stanford has the most, so whatever. But this is a good, not that the Big Ten should call themselves the Conference of Champions, because that would be lame. Right. This is a good point. Like,
can you call yourself
the Conference of Champions if you're losing 231 championships, except for the fact that like they did win those championships in as Pac-12 programs, so the Pac-12 still gets to claim them.
Three thoughts. A, this is all marketing bullshit. You can call yourself whatever you want.
Yes.
Every team slogan, every athletic slogan is like champions made here, or where we make winners out of it, whatever it is, like breeding winners or whatever it is, like whatever that slogan is, every conference, every team has their corny little saying. And part of it is valid if you've won championships before. And the other part is it's for marketing reasons and for recruiting reasons, and you're going to play up anything. So why not? The second thing I have here is the Pac-12 should continue it because that's their thing. But number three, and personally, if I was the Pac-12, I would drop it, not because SC and UCLA are gone, and because you suddenly don't have the top three anymore, and because, you know, the truth matters with marketing and all that stuff. Like, not because of that, but because I think if you're the Pac-12, you need a rebrand. You need a rebrand in totality. And as much as I hate what happened to, say, like the Big East, and how the Big East went from this conference when I was a kid that had Miami and Boston College and Virginia Tech and West Virginia, and they were very fun, football conference. And then suddenly they just got ravaged by the SEC and the ACC, and the Big Ten, and like suddenly became a group of Catholic basketball schools. And it's like, well, that's not what the Big East used to be. Like, it didn't used to just be where, you know, Georgetown and friends played basketball. You know what I mean? Like, it didn't used to be that. But now it is. I think that as much as it kills me that the Pac-12 is not going to be the Pac-12 anymore, the Pac-10, whatever it needs to be, and that as much as I hate just nuking the whole thing, I think the Pac-12 would be better just to nuke the whole thing and do what the Mountain West did when the WAC collapsed and change your name. And maybe not change the name, maybe call it just the Pacific Conference, maybe go back to the PCC. I don't know, something, maybe drop the number, but change your entire thing. Rebrand completely. Like, go completely different in how you market everything, in how you change everything, anything. And don't continue with the status quo, because the Pac-12 just needs change.
So my pushback on that is, if you rebrand totally, does that give the sort of college football infrastructure room to rebrand itself as well? Because you still want to be in the Power Five branding. Like, you still want to be, and maybe you're headed for getting kicked out of that sort of grouping anyways, but I feel like you might open the door for more of that if you change your name, if you go to Pacific Coast Conference or something like that, and just sort of like change your identity. It feels like admitting defeat to me.
And it would be admitting
all
defeat.
The word out of the Pac-12 is the opposite of
But everybody is saying that you're dead anyways.
Yes, but so, like, the Pac-12 is very, very clearly responded to that by sounding like they're going to go down with the ship.
Yeah, I agree, but I also think that you can at minimum change your slogan.
Well, you're going to have to. I think you are going to have to change your slogan. I wouldn't do a full rebrand. I stay the Pac-12. But I changed my slogan.
But the rebrand doesn't have to just be like your name and logo. The rebrand could just be how you're presenting yourself.
Yeah.
How you're marketing yourself. And it could be that it's, you know, it's not about champions, the conference of champions. Maybe it's the conference of the future or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. It could be anything, right? Yeah. But I. Yeah. Now, in terms of the Big Ten, would the Big Ten want to steal the Conference of Champions thing?
No.
I think that it's synonymous with the Pac-12, but also I think it's a testament to how good of a slogan it was that we use it.
Mm-hmm.
That we all remember.
I don't know the slogan of any of the other ones, but
the only other one we know is the SECs, and it means more, right?
Yeah, it means more.
And that's because those slogans were good. And I know that the Pac-12 one gets used ironically, but like just because it's used ironically doesn't mean that it was worth that it didn't have its worth in the first place, because it was catchy enough to be memorable. And it does have its validity when you talk about, you know, Jason's original point about all the championships anyway. So, yeah. Definitely has its point there. Let's go to questions that we're getting currently in the chat. Kenny says, is it too early to get hyped about SC's baseball season so far this year? The Trojans currently rank third in the Pac-12, 7-2 in conference, ahead of UCLA at 6-3, tied with Stanford for second, who are also at 7-2. The Trojans is 14-8-1. Overall, look at SC baseball doing its thing.
Hey, we love it. SC baseball is it should take itself more seriously, and it should, you know, I love to see USC going out there and living up to that baseball brand,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, has been at a time a legendary brand in college baseball. So. Yeah, I love to see it. Honestly, I don't know enough about the current going on.
Five wins on the bounce.
In the program to know whether or not this is real or if this is just sort of a false dawn. But hey, the beauty of not knowing enough is you can just get on board and say, screw it. I'm just going to enjoy this and see where it leads.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would love to be able to get into college baseball, the College World Series sort of mindset and pay attention and all that kind of stuff. USC was getting a chance there.
There is nothing, literally nothing, that made me happier as a kid than SC baseball. Like, I loved SC baseball. Would listen to games on the radio.
You're a baseball guy, as evidenced by,
you know, the look, the hat, the current obsession with MLB The Show.
The Cubs hat with the Cubs World Series SI poster right behind you. Like, we're very baseball forward right now.
It's my team, unlike most of the people around SC. My baseball team has won a World Series in a real one.
He'll keep digging you, Dodger fans. Like, he'll
hey, Dallas in the chat mentioned the Braves earlier. So, you know, there's other people who's won real World Series. My lifetime, which is good. But anyways, SC baseball looks good right now. You want to see more of that. To me, it's SC baseball and football are the pride and joy of the athletic department. It should be considered that. It's not, but it should really be considered that. Yeah. Tim says, if you can only pick one away game this year, which one is it for you? We're looking into Colorado to see the SC versus CU Primes. It's Oregon, right? It's got to be Oregon. I think that Colorado's a good away game. If you've never been to Boulder, it's a fun place. I think Folsom Field is an interesting place. It's a stadium I like. I know Alicia hates.
I hate for technical. If I went as a spectator, I might feel differently about it. Yeah. But
yeah. Super beautiful. I think that's a good pick. But I think,
and the last time we went, which was the first and only time I've been there,
it snowed the time before.
They couldn't run. Cold. They couldn't run.
Too cold for Ralphie.
Yeah, Ralphie. So
yeah. I think Colorado's a good pick. There's always the Notre Dame game this October, which I think is super valid. But for us,
it's Oregon. It's the final trip to Autzen. Oregon mm-hmm. getting Bo Nix back, looking like a competitor for the Pac-12 title. That game is going to be very meaningful. It's going to be raucous. It's going to be crazy. USC yeah. Colorado is going to be interesting, but that shouldn't be a good game unless something goes wrong for USC. So, and it's entirely possible, but yeah.
Yeah. I think Colorado might be a good game to sort of guarantee your win, your road win, which is a big part of a road trip. A loss will kill off a good trip to Texas. Will be soured by the outcome. Dallas in the chat says, Michael, the Big East was always a group of Catholic schools from the Northeast until they dirtied themselves when they courted Miami drug money. Now, that's valid in the sense that, like, you always had BC, Pitt in the Big East, and so on. Yeah. And Georgetown in there for basketball, all that stuff. I think for me, it's just like, it wasn't always just that. It was more about everything else. You had Syracuse, and you had the Syracuse Miami rivalry in the 90s was fun. Miami just being good at football. I just miss it. I miss it. And they were supposed to, Miami and Virginia Tech were supposed to take over the ACC, and they've gone to the ACC and done nothing. Neither one of them. It's been Clemson's conference, which has been fascinating. Nick says, are you guys excited for the Big Ten or what?
Yeah. Excited, nervous, curious, intrigued. A lot of words I could use to describe my feelings on the Big Ten. It's just still wild to me that it's already happening. Like
it feels like it was gonna be so long in the future.
Yeah.
But also I remember where I was when I found out that Qatar had won the World Cup, and that was 12 years in the future. It was going to take forever to get there. And then the World Cup has already happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's my days of like thinking that, oh my God, that was, I remember when SC scheduled Nebraska in 2005 and then it got pushed back to 2006. How amazing that was going to be. And it's crazy. I think it's almost 20 years ago already.
Yeah. Wild.
Yeah. Things go quickly, but yeah, I'd say we're both excited about that and what happens with the program going to the future. West Texas Mike says, why does Trojan baseball refuse to wear and sell the script jersey? The football team keeps taking picks in.
It doesn't make sense though. Like, I'm with you on this. They keep taking recruiting trip pictures in a USC baseball jersey that doesn't seem to exist except for the purposes of the football team. It's a very strange thing. Maybe it's like a Nike thing. Maybe it's like a fashion line that is available somewhere that we don't. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it is available for purchase and somebody who's listening will let us know. So let us know. But like,
yeah.
If
you've been in the bookstore lately, let us know.
Yeah.
Dallas says, can't wait until we're in the Big Ten. Kinnick is my top road trip. Love how they have the wave to the kids in the children's hospital at the end of the first quarter. Yeah. That's thoroughly on the top of my list for the, maybe not the top of my Big Ten list, but right up there.
This is my favorite thing about going to the Big Ten, is just sort of like every new thing is going to be cool. Like,
yes,
Kinnick is going to be cool. The horseshoe, the big house, even just
what's the worst trip in the Big Ten? Because the worst trip in the Big Ten is Rutgers, is still going to be cool because you're like, we can go to Philly.
Yeah.
When we've ever been to Philly before.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Go to New York if you wanted to. Yeah.
Cheesesteak tour.
Everything's going to be super cool. Iowa, Michigan, Ohio State, Wisconsin, Penn State. Those certainly the big ones that are going to be super exciting. Last question here comes from Random Murdy. How is Jessie doing? Will she make an appearance on the show?
Jessie is doing wonderful.
You want to bring Jessie in?
Should I bring Jessie in?
Go bring Jessie in.
I don't want to get her excited though.
Okay.
I took her on a longish walk this morning and she's just been kind of chill and like.
Okay.
I could go get her.
All right.
Want me to go get her? Do the people, there's a delay in our chat, so I can't really see, but I could go get her.
It's all right. We can do it. We can do it another time. Nick says SC at Michigan will be stupid awesome. Yes, I agree. All right. We'll save Jessie for another episode. It'll be reason to come back.
Yeah. I had a thought that because I'm trying to do a little bit more like regular training with her to sort of just like stimulate her mind. Right. And so, we're getting yeses to Jessie, so I might have to do it, but I want to teach her how to jump up into my chair so that like she can sit up here.
That would be cool.
But my powers as a dog trainer are not necessarily.
All right. Go get her really quick.
I'll go get her really quick. Hold on.
Really quick.
I need to do this while not pulling all of our equipment away.
Yeah. Here's the thing. She says she doesn't want to get her excited. Jessie, of course, is crate trained and. Yeah. It's the cutest thing. She puts herself to bed every night. She's like, I'm going to bed. You guys not going put me to bed yet? I'm just going to go to bed. I'm just going to walk into my little doghouse and put myself to bed. And it's the best. So, but when you take her out of the crate, which she's in right now because we've been recording, she's super excited. She's just going to be excited anyways. Might as well get her excited on the pod. Uh-oh. I can see movement. Here we go.
She's doing very good and she's sitting. It's part of the training that she's been doing. She knows she's supposed to sit. Oh.
The people at home listening on Apple Podcasts are missing this.
You can even tell. Though
you can why don't you grab your camera and just aim it down. There you go. There's Jessie.
Will you shake? She's still learning shake. She doesn't like it yet.
Dallas says we should put a GoPro on Jessie so we can see wanderings with Jessie while we're on there.
Got to see that she was shaking.
But. Yeah. Oh well. That's Jessie. That's her pride and joy, named after, of course, combination of Jessie Pinkman and Jessie from Toy Story. Spelled like Jessie from Toy Story, but really named after Jesse Pinkman. So
yes, really, just because like technically we thought that like Jesse from Toy Story is the girl name, and Jesse from Breaking Bad is the boy name. But like,
to be honest, we got a dog before, named Combo,
who I almost grabbed on my way over to Jesse's crate.
Combo is a stuffed dog that we got before we moved into a place where we could have a dog. And Combo is a black and white border collie. And we named him Combo after the character Combo in Breaking Bad. Combo of black and white fur. Also, Combo is one of my favorite characters in Breaking Bad. So it made sense that when we got Jesse, who was a real life border collie, with the looks exactly just like Combo.
Completely by accident, I might add, because she, I can't. She's being very good right now. I think I jinxed her whole, I don't want to get her excited thing, because like, she's the most chill that she's been.
She knows she's on there.
in a long time. But that's why I took her on a longish walk, because it's not raining and she can finally be. That's true too. Like the rain. Oh, you can see her on your screen. The level of not chill that this dog got when the rain was happening and I couldn't take her out for full stretches of exercise. It stopped raining and now she's back to being chill because she's getting a full walk out in the sun. She likes it.
Yeah. So that's Jesse. That's how the world turns with Jesse. So, all right, we'll be back next week, but we'll be back later this week. If you joined us in the Rot Squad for bonus content, we're going to come back later this week, probably Wednesday or Thursday. Look for that. And we'll be back later on. Thanks for listening, as always. Thanks for joining us here in the chat. We always have a good time. The Tims, Warren, Nick, Ramamurti, Ron, Kenny, Dallas, Ramamurti, anybody else I'm missing off the top, West Texas Mike, off the top of my head, that have joined us here in the live chat. We always appreciate you. And we'll be back next time. So until then, see ya.
See ya.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.